This is a Rain Replay.
You've locked onto the Rain Report for the week of June 8th, 2001. I'm Larry McGlore, KB9DIP. We continue excerpting from the 2001 Dayton Hamventions FCC Forum. We'll hear from FCC Special Counsel for Enforcement, Riley Hollingsworth, K4ZDH, with a look at the state of amateur radio enforcement as we near the midpoint of 2001.
You're no doubt wondering where, with the new chairman and the new administration, enforcement is going. Now, the answer is very simple. More of the same. Our present chairman, Michael Powell, was a commissioner before. It surprised me how many people didn't realize that. He was a defense commissioner. And the Enforcement Bureau worked closer with him than any other commissioner. He understands emergency communications, understands amateur radio, and he's just outstanding. And from an enforcement standpoint, we've noted that the son of a four-star, they don't tend to put up with a lot of crap. And so that made us very happy. But to be honest, and I'm not just saying this as a loyal employee, but to be perfectly honest, had enforcement been able to choose someone to be chairman, it would have been Powell. Now, we were afraid that we might get a commissioner from a utilities commission somewhere around the country, which would have been fine, but the learning curve and starting from the ground up and showing them what amateur radio is and what emergency communications are and so forth is difficult. Now, he's no nonsense person. He believes that if you have rules, then your job is to enforce them. And he's told us specifically, don't worry about my legacy. Do your job, enforce the rules, and the legacy will fall where it falls. Where you will see him backing out of enforcement is areas where we don't have a clear mandate, such as in some of the mergers. He doesn't like holding up a merger to extract concessions so that the parties will get the merger through quicker, rather than get into a debate or a legal contest with us. So if the rule isn't good, he wants it out. If we need rules, he wants good rules. And the good rules that we have, he wants them enforced and enforced severely, and it's a good thing. So from enforcement, you can expect more of the same. We're not letting up. There were 47 enforcement actions in the month of April. And we won't stop or even slow down until you can be perfectly comfortable leaving the rig on in the house or the car, until you can be perfectly comfortable demonstrating it to your niece or your neighbor without sweating bullets over what you're going to hear on it. Now, complaints are dropping. Thank you. Complaints are dropping way down, but this just gives us more time for the more complex cases, some of the unidentifieds and so forth. So the fact that complaints are declining, and they have been really starting, I guess, during the summer, last summer, is a good indicator, I think, of the health of the amateur radio service. People ask me, what are my biggest problems in enforcement? When you wake up at 4:30 in the morning, what are you worrying about? And I made a list here. One is California. And this is true in the land mobile service, too, which is part of my job. If it weren't for California, amateur enforcement would be a one-day-a-week job. And we wouldn't need most, even in the land mobile area, we wouldn't need most of the rules. The second thing that worries me is, and when I say this, keep in mind, there's some overlap between the first and second categories here. The second category is stupidity. And that's how some operators sound on the air, not realizing or not caring that they're being listened to all over the world and all over the country, even on 2 meters, because as you've heard me say dozens of times, more people than ever before have scanners. There are more shortwave listeners than ever before. They don't realize that the media listens quite a bit, and I'm going to demonstrate that directly here in a moment. The third category is 10-meter unlicensed incursion. Part of that is because of the good propagation that we have right now, and so that will somewhat decline, but 10-meter intrusion bothers me. It should bother you. No matter how good the service is from within, which is what we've been working on, you have to protect the parameters of any border, and I'm hoping that I'm sure that the new chairman, having a military orientation, will understand this. If you don't protect the flanks, then no matter what the integrity is of your service inside, it's endangered. So we need to, the commission needs to do more. The league and some other entities have just finished a several year review of just where the unlicensed incursion on 10 meters is coming from. About half of it is offshore. And don't think that it's mostly from truckers, because it isn't. We have a lot of truckers out there that are outstanding amateur operators, and maybe they got into CB first, but that led them into amateur radio. There's a truckers group that meets on 14302.5. Very good group. So we can't just say it's truckers on 10 meters. Now, a lot of it is unlicensed from South America. Some of it is free banding from the CB area, and they go in and buy a 10-meter unit from Radio Shack or a truck stop. So that's the four things that worry me. The most important questions that you need to ask and that you need to be thinking about, one is, what is your responsibility? Because now that enforcement is back, you can't relax and become complacent. Enforcement won't save your bands. That's totally up to you. But you've got to think where you're going to take the amateur radio service and what you're going to do with it now that enforcement is back. And I realize that over the past 10 years, lack of enforcement has been one of your biggest problems. But now that that's back, you have serious issues to think about and to think about where you're going to take it. And you've got to think about the world situation. And that's why it's so important to us at the commission how you sound on the bands. The people on 40 meters and even 75 meters are heard all over the world. And these ITU countries have one boat just like we do, and they don't like how we sound on the bands at all in a lot of cases. You have to remember the tremendous, and think about the tremendous value of the spectrum that you're using. It's worth billions of dollars. And you have to think about the national situation. Newspapers listen to amateur radio now, 2-meter repeaters. As I've said every year, during the Hurricane Watch Net, the Tampa Tribune has a reporter there with earphones listening to all of the communications coming out of the National Hurricane Center, which they have a room set aside for an amateur station.
You're listening to the Rain Report from www.rainreport.com.
Also, you need to think about and you need to make sure that you have a national voice in D.C. and in working with the world governments. Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association represents recreational pilots. The truckers, there's American Truckers Association, American Medical Association. I was in Ocean City recently. There was a national kite flying contest there. They have a national kite flying society, for God's sakes. There's also an international, if you saw the news a couple of weeks ago, there's an international bottled water foundation. So think about it. On any given weekend, you could be using $1 billion worth of spectrum, so you've got to have some kind of national organization. You don't have to agree with it, but you've got to have somebody or some group that can walk in and say, we represent 300,000 amateurs in the United States. Otherwise, you can bet if this were a business part of a weekday that Sprint, Nextel, MCI, they would all be in the commission, and you've just got to have some type of representation. And when you think about how you operate, suppose you come home on a Friday evening, check into a net, work a little CW, maybe you get on Saturday morning, do stuff in the yard the rest of the weekend, maybe you get on Sunday night. You've used $1 billion worth of spectrum. And as Jim Haney has said a number of times, Bill Gates, some of these people would love to walk in and say, we'll buy this. We'll buy this from the government. $1 billion is nothing to them. So you can't survive without a national organization. And we are back into enforcement after 10 to 12 years of neglect for one reason, and that was the letter that the league wrote the chairman in July of 1998, outlining the embarrassing lack of enforcement over 10 years, except for the most dramatic cases. And that's why we're back in enforcement, and that's why I'm standing here. A lot of people don't realize how closely the commission works with the league on such issues as RFI from power line interference. We have an informal agreement with the league that Ed Hare takes those cases in the first instance after you as a consumer has tried to, after you've tried to deal with the power company, you've documented a few phone calls, and if you're not getting anywhere and they don't have a reasonable response, you can go to the league. The league will contact the power company, and they have quite a novel approach, reminding the power company. And the basic thing is to get to some technical person in the power company. And, of course, getting to a human these days is a phenomenal achievement, let alone a technical person. But they can show them how, when their system is interfering beyond certain limits with an amateur system, it's a forewarning for something that could be a catastrophic failure in their system that may knock out a whole grid or a whole neighborhood. And they seem to be very responsive to that. And if that doesn't work, they refer the case to us. And I would say out of about 12 cases over the last year, we have three, which means of nine, they got it either resolved or there's enough progress being made that all the parties think that it's reasonable progress. And this is important because our power system, just like our bridges, it's getting pretty old. And, you know, our bridges, a few years ago, we realized what a crisis we were in with most of the major bridges in this country. They were over 20 years old. The power grid, in a lot of cases, is in the same state. Zoning ordinances and anti-tower laws. If it hadn't been for a few amateurs in Texas that noticed the bill that was about to be passed, you couldn't have an amateur tower in a whole state of Texas over about 20 feet tall. But somebody, being vigilant, noticed that and went to the league, went to the Texas legislature, and they gave them language that accomplished what they wanted to accomplish without strangling amateur radio. Restrictive deeds and covenants, you'll be hearing more and more about that. And we hear a lot of sad stories at the commission with people who retired, found a good area, a good neighborhood, checked the zoning laws. The zoning laws were fine as far as towers go. Sat down at the settlement table, and when you sign the 20 or 30 documents that you sign in that flurry of paperwork, realized that there were restrictive deeds and covenants, and they couldn't have an outside antenna. You've got to have a national approach to that problem. You can't just deal with it jurisdiction by jurisdiction, and there needs to be some type of national source that puts pressure on the commission and on Congress to strengthen PRB1 or get the commission more active in that area.
Riley Hollingsworth, K4ZDH, FCC Special Counsel for Enforcement, excerpted from his talk during the FCC Forum at the 2001 Dayton Hamvention. We'll continue his talk next time. The Rain Report is copyright 2001, Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Larry McGlore, KB9DIP.